This is Edge Cases, a podcast about mostly Apple-related software development, featuring myself and my co-host, the Butch and Sundance of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 25. It's Friday, November 2nd, 2012. What's our topic this week, Wolf?
Cappuccino.
I've always liked a good caffeinated beverage. So presumably you mean the technology.
The technology. Of course, I always mean the technology. I know nothing else.
So if you talk about, you know, share, like you're talking about a technology and not a
There needs to be a share.js or something like that. It probably already is.
And share with, like, no, there aren't any letters to lop off the end. Char, maybe, but of course that's also a word. Alrighty, so I don't think we have any feedback this week. Nope. Wolf?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Me either. So why don't we get to it?
Okay. So I figured that cappuccino, there's a topic I want to explore in the future, which is kind of like the entire native versus web thing. And but
in 45 minutes.
But that is a future topic. And I think maybe some background or material and the things I end up talking about in that episode, I can lay down here. So, and one of the big backgrounder things is where I get the impression that a lot of people don't know the story of, and is cappuccino. So I figured I'd kind of lay down the backstory of what cappuccino was, what it is, and where it's going, and so forth. So consider this a bit of a history lesson and overview type thing.
Sounds good.
So first thing to, when you think of like any sort of web technology, is that, and I'm stealing this these bullet points from Ross Boucher, which I'll talk about later, and where this is his bullet points at the top in his talk that he gives on cappuccino. But these, I pretty much came upon this same idea myself, but he put in slightly better wording, so I'm going to use his wording. So if you think of like a horizontal line and representing kind of a spectrum of web technologies, on the left of it, you can think of something like the New York Times, which is like it's basically a static web page with a pile of hyperlinks, right? And then moving maybe a little bit to the right, you think of something maybe a little bit richer, which is like Amazon. And Amazon is customized to you, that you know that it knows your purchase history and all that, but it's still very much like you have a URL, you have a page, it's very one-to-one. And so it's customized but still page-based. And kind of moving further to the right of the spectrum, you can think of something like Facebook, which is like a page that also has a chat in it and also has all these dynamic widgets that are pluggable that based on what things you want, what junk you want on your timeline. And finally, on the right-hand side of the spectrum, you can think of something like Google Maps, which is a single-page web application, which is you can give it different URLs for bookmarking purposes and all that, but it's pretty much as you manipulate, as you zoom in and out, as you type directions, all that, it might be changing the URL nowadays, but that's kind of an interesting sleight of hand. But the idea that you have this thing called a single page app, and you have these like web apps, right, that you've gone really away when you're looking at Google Map, is very far divorced from the New York Times pile of hyperlinks type model. And so cappuccino is you can think of it as cocoa for the web. And it's for building these single page applications, and specifically for building desktop class single page applications. So when I found out about cappuccino, I found out about it, I think, how most people did. There is this application called that was released on the web with very little, like, it's like, you know, I got the link. I think it was pre-Twitter. Maybe it was pre-Twitter. I was like, I don't even know how I found out about this anymore, but it was like, there's this like, Twitter was wrong. And I found out about this app, like, check this app out. It's like Keynote on the web. So it's like, it was at 280slides.com. And I go there, and man, it felt like pretty much like a Keynote 1.0 type thing, like on the web, where you had your slides and you had your text fields and can do up nice little slides and all that and save it on the web, all that. And it had a toolbar, it had menus, it had inspectors, and it it was very impressive. And so 280 slides, well, the 280 from there, references the, it was actually from what I saw was the first cappuccino app I ever saw. And I remember I had a programming, I ran this local Macintosh developer group, Apple developer group, called PSIG. And I remember that night, we opened it up together and we kind of reading through the source code. And we're kind of like finding like weird Objective-C stuff in there. And we couldn't figure out what was going on here. It was like someone ported like Cocoa to the web. So it was very interesting to us. But so it was the 280 and 280 slides refers to 280 North, which was this company that was, I think it was founded in 2008. At least that's when it got its angel funding. And they got Francisco Tomalski, Ross Boucher, and Tom Robinson are the principals. And they got $250,000 in angel funding in 2008. And they worked hard to develop Cappuccino, which is, of course, Cocoa for the web. And so the lowest level thing to think about here in Cappuccino is that it is, you know, obviously web browsers only run JavaScript. So they wrote this new language, I think it's primarily Francisco on this one, called Objective-J. And very much along the same lines, like there's this book written by Brad Cox and who was the other guy? Do you remember the other author on Object-Oriented Software, An Evolutionary Approach?
I don't know.
Oh, darn, I actually have it on my shelf. I don't want to walk away from the mic, so I'll just leave my dead neuron here for everyone to see. And
well, and it'll be in the show notes.
Okay, good. And so the interesting thing about Objective-C is that, so as laid out by Brad Cox and his unnamed co-conspirator, was the idea that you could take a procedural language, in this case C, and you could bolt basically a small talk style messaging system on top of it. And that was kind of like how Objective-C came to be. He said it was almost a kind of a design pattern for languages where you can take any procedural language and turn it to object-oriented language if you thus introduce these message passing systems, or system, I guess. And Objective-C was kind of like, you know, kind of like saying, here's a concrete example. So I don't know which came first, the idea or the implementation of the idea. But either way, that's what Objective-C was. And very much along the same lines of that idea, the evolutionary approach, Objective-J does that for JavaScript, which is kind of weird because, like, when you think of JavaScript, you already think, well, of course it has objects, right? And in fact, it's prototypical, which is yet another episode we'll have to do. But the difference is that when you have an object in JavaScript and you say object.foo, that is essentially, it's a dynamic lookup that it's looking for essentially a slot with a function in there and named foo, and then it executes a function there. But it's not actually a message sent, as we know it in Objective-C, as Smalltalk people know it. And so you can't really do things like capturing invocation. Well, maybe you could with like function interposers or something like that, but it's a lot harder to do. And it's like implementing like an undo system as we know it in like the NS undo manager and stuff like that is much a different beast. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it's definitely a much different beast than what you have in Objective-J. So Objective-J, much like we have objc message send, that's the fundamental primitive for sending messages in a C-based system to turn into this Objective-C thing we know and love. Objective-J actually has...
Or at least no,
there you go. Objective-J underneath actually has objc message send, and when you look at Objective-J, it looks heck of a lot like Objective-C. That it is... It's a superset of JavaScript, like Objective-C is a superset of C, but it does have the square brackets, and it's used in pretty much exactly the same way as the square brackets were used in Objective-C. Of course, Objective-C initially was written as you would pre-process the Objective-C code and turn into C that then the C compiler would compile. And of course, this was the only the very earliest implementation. So that but it gives you the conceptual model here that much the same way that Objective-J is a, you can think of it as a, basically a preprocessor for JavaScript, where it will look for those at implementation symbols, it will look for those square brackets, and knows it has to do translation or to turn that into straight up JavaScript. So the concepts here pretty much match one to one. So it's a really interesting thing to do for the web, which is, you know, you have things like CoffeeScript and other alternative languages. In fact, there's a website devoted to alternative JavaScript languages. If I remember correctly, it's probably altjs.org or something along those lines. But so it's so Objective-J is along those lines of alternative language that compiles down to JavaScript, and in the merging languages camp, which is yet another episode, I guess I have a lot of topics to talk about, is the term that was, and that it seems to be called transpiling, where you take one language and you transpile it, and translate, interpret type thing, you translate, compile, I guess, into a JavaScript in this case. So the interesting thing about Objective-J is that it, even, I mean, this was introduced, what, 5 years ago, something like that? And even today, it kind of feels like you're programming in a future version of Objective-C when you program in Objective-J. And I have a list of reasons here why it kind of feels that way. Number one, Objective-J files, source files. You don't have the .h, and .m files, where you have the interface and .h files and the implementation and .m files. You just have .j files. And I thought that was a little bit of, you know, a little bit of chutzpah there, having, you know, this, you know, this, them that's claiming .j, right? Because it could be the .opj, and I kind of, you know, but yeah, we're just .j, baby. So,
well, Objective-C couldn't even get a single letter.
Right. And so, so the interface.
Well, they could only get .m, which doesn't actually mean anything, right?
Right. They couldn't get C. You know, does it stand for module? Yeah. Does it stand for implementation? It's lost to the ages. I mean, I've heard it both ways. The interface and implementation are in the same file, the .j file. And interestingly enough, is that there is no at interface in Objective-J. Instead, all you have is at implementation. But what's interesting is that, you know how on like at interface, it's like my class colon NS object, and then you have open curly, and then that's where you put your IVARs.
Right.
Instead, that's moved into at implementation. So they kind of fused the at interface and at implementation into one go.
Well, you know, I mean, you remember, right? I mean, you can put IVARs in Objective-C implementation blocks now as well.
Right. Yeah, right. That's
you're right. It was the future.
Yeah, I actually forgot about that. Yeah. I haven't used that yet. Yeah, so the other thing, a few other things, is that .h files, we have these IB outlets and IB actions. And if you actually look at how, you know, we type them in, but if you look at how they're implemented, it's really is this like grand hack, right? That if you look at, if you command double click on IB outlet, you'll find, I think it's like a pound define to nothing.
Yep.
And I think that's the same thing with IB action. Oh, IB action is void.
Void, right. Yeah, because it needs to be a return type.
Right. And so all these are these dumb preprocessor hacks, just so the scanner for interface builder could be dumb and try to figure out, have an easier case to try to figure out what things it should allow you to hook up to.
Yeah. it's not quite that simple anymore, but it's... Right. Close enough. It's still a hack.
Yes. Yeah, because you're probably thinking of property stuff.
No, it's just that it's part of the index now.
Oh, right.
So it's not that Interface Builder itself is reading headers anymore, which is good, but it's still, you know, the fact that it isn't like a primitive, a language primitive or something like that, mm-hmm. means that they had to bolt it onto Objective-C to make it work.
Now, that's actually interesting. I mean, if the index, I assume that Interface Builder is using the indexer there, but if those are those dumb preprocessor defines that go away when you preprocess, are those like symbols somehow still in there?
Well, they were in, actually, that's a good question. They're in, I don't know exactly how it works in the new index, mm-hmm. But in the old index, it was the old, well, I'm not sure what I'm talking about. The old index was actually its own parser. Mm-hmm. It didn't actually use the compiler.
Right.
And so they could do whatever they wanted when they were reading it in. So they could read those dumb defines and know what they were and know how to put them in the internal Xcode index. Since the new one is using Clang, I don't know exactly how they do it, but I would expect it to be something similar. There's some extra code in there somehow to pull those out before you get to the AST portion of it, because they will be defined down to nothing once you get past the preprocessor.
Right. Yeah, I think there's probably some special case stuff going in there. Yep. Anyway, so Objective-J actually has a first class feature like at outlet. And so you put that on your IVAR, and this pretty much serves the same purpose as IBOutlet. But I think, you know, IBOutlet and IBAction, I think, are important enough to kind of deserve their own at symbol. And so you get that with Objective-J. With Arc, nowadays, it's our IVARs have taken on kind of new powers that often, you know, it's kind of weird because, like, you know, IVARs were really pathetic in Objective-C1. And so then we had properties, which kind of like allowed you to do synthesize getters and setters and relieved you a lot of the tedium of kind of dealing with these IVARs.
Though not all.
Right. Do you have something specific in mind?
Well, I was just always annoyed when the first iteration of properties that you still needed to declare it and define it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was so annoying.
Yes, yes. Of course, now we have synthesize by default.
Right.
And now, of course, we also have Arc, which has pretty much studied up those IVARs for retaining and releasing purposes.
That's the technical term.
Don't tell anyone I said that. So with the Cappuccino, you have you don't have properties, and arguably you don't need them. You do have the at accessors. I don't know what to call it, keyword or something that allow you put it at, so you can have like in a string. CP string name, and then add accessors, and that will actually write your set name and your name methods for you. And it's right in line with the IVAR declaration, so it's a simpler syntax than properties, but it kind of harks back to the original IVAR declaration syntax, and I think this was all written before properties. I'm not quite sure about that timeline wise, but I think it was. But it seems a lot more elegant to me, and also the type of stuff that you have to declare, you know, whether it's copying or atomic or non-atomic and that type of stuff. You know, this is JavaScript, so all that stuff is kind of, that's much lower level than what JavaScript deals with. So that doesn't need to be specified. So when you look at like, I don't know if anyone's written this yet, but you pretty much can take like standard COCO code, like Objective-C code, and you can, with like a couple regular expressions, translate it to Objective-J. I mean, it looks very, very similar. And one of those transformations is that everything that's like NS string, NS dictionary, all our faves, you just have CP for Cappuccino classes. So you have a CP string, CP dictionary, what have you, which is kind of interesting because, of course, JavaScript has its own strings and JavaScript has its own dictionaries, all that. And it turns out those are much like we expect them. With Core Foundation, you have the concept of tool-free bridged objects. So a NS string is a CF string and an NS dictionary is a CF dictionary. They did exactly the same thing with a JavaScript, in that they basically did magic where you can send messages to plain old JavaScript dictionaries like object.index to it, and it all works out. So again, those patterns apply. And in fact, there's, if you look at the layer of the Cappuccino frameworks, is that at the bottom there they actually have this core foundation stuff. They have like CF, HTTP, and what else? Like CF bundle, CF data type stuff. And this is kind of like the procedural APIs on top of the low-level JavaScript stuff. And then you have Foundation, and then you have AppCat on top of that. So it's very much architected the same thing.
Well, and the same thing happened with Java as well. Actually, I think with Java, they went ahead and used the Java string class instead of an NS string class, although I could be wrong. But it all feels very similar to what happened there.
I actually didn't know that about the Java implementation. That's interesting. And a couple of things that, you know, JavaScript is not really a type language. So the type signatures in your Objective-J methods look just like the Objective-C ones, except you throw away the asterisks, but that is not enforced. It's pretty much just for documentation purposes. So you have a method foobar baz, and it takes a string and a number and a bool. You can put those all in there. You can put your CP string in there and your CP number, and then your all uppercase B-O-O-L in there. And but that's only really for documentation purposes, because that isn't looked at runtime. And of course, when you actually are like declaring a local variable, you don't say like CP string foo equals bar. You just say var foo equals bar, because JavaScript is not typed that way. So, and the final funny thing about kind of what I say is kind of like, it's like you're working the future version of Objective-C, is that because JavaScript has first class functions, and it has from day one, a lot of the Cappuccino APIs deal with these functions, and so before Cocoa had blocks, you had these things that would take function arguments and could call them when things happened, and like the CP URL connection type stuff can take callbacks that, or their CP operation stuff before Cocoa got it. So again, it feels like it's weird kind of Back to the Future type stuff, where it's you see it pop up later on, but it's especially with like the now the new literal syntax, because CP arrays are JavaScript arrays, so you can use object at index, or you just can use the literal, you say my array, open square brace, whatever index, close square brace. So both of those work, and in fact, the latter is faster because you don't go through the message send. So it's common to see like an Objective J code to, like, when you're trying to send a message to object N, that you access it with the square braces for the array access, but then it's inside a square braces for a message send. And conceptually, you look at it first, it's like it's kind of hard to parse, but I have gotten used to it. And it was really funny now that we have that Objective-C, that with the what do you call that? It's not literal, it's like a direct subscript access or something.
Yes, there's a specific name for method that's used, subscript might be a good way to put it. I'm not sure exactly.
Good enough for our purposes here. Okay, so that's kind of like the foundation of how this stuff all started, why I ran into it. So you have basically it's Cocoa for the web. And when I mean Cocoa for the web, I actually do mean the fact that you're running on, in a web browser is almost incidental. Like, at no time, unless you actually need to do something beyond what Cappuccino can do, do you deal with HTML or CSS or whatever. Instead, you deal with higher-level concepts like a CP table view, a CP window, what have you. And kind of adding on to this, 280 North shipped this application called Atlas. And Atlas was this... essentially, it's a develop environment for Cappuccino. And we're having this Back to the Future type feeling to it. Because I'm going to see if I can fire up Atlas again and take a screenshot of it. Because, and maybe some other screenshots out there. Because it is kind of spooky how much Atlas looked like Interface Builder once it was rolled into... Was it Interface Builder 3 or was it... Or I think it was Interface Builder when they actually rolled into Xcode. It's darn spooky. In fact, I even got, when it first came out, Ross Boucher actually asked me, do you know if Apple had anything? Did they were looking at Atlas or something? I forget what his exact quote. I'm butchering it there, but it's almost uncanny with the terms of the collection view on the right-hand side of your library and how you drag it in and the tower, the inspector then below it. It was very, very, almost one-to-one. But Atlas was also interesting because Atlas was a Cappuccino app in itself. in that you have atlas.app sitting in your applications folder. You double click it, and it opens up, and you have a UI that looks a lot like a Mac app in terms of the gradients, all that. But it was clearly not, because like the stoplight, window controls, you know, the close, minimize, Mac zoom that you have in the upper left hand corner of Mac Windows, that was replaced with something that looked more like a X inside a circle. It was all very tasteful and actually matched the gradients really well. And that was the theme Aristo, which they commissioned the guys at Sofa, which ended up being bought out by Facebook. But they basically created a very high-quality UI language, design language for their user interface. And that's on GitHub now. But it's it looked really great. Custom scrollers. In many ways, I wish like Mac OS X looked like that everywhere. I thought it was very tasteful, very beautiful. But anyway, Atlas was built in this technology called Native Client. And Native Client essentially allows you to build, you know, these web apps, but package them up in .apps that would have a server-side component and then would launch. And actually, it's like using WebKit to put up windows that... so you could have a CP window that ends up being kind of bridged to a NS window that has a WebKit view in it. And they pulled some tricks with transparency and stuff like that. So it looked... So even though you have like this div that represents a window, it looks like it's a native window flowing with all the rest. So there's some bugs when you're like switching screens, but they got those pretty much nailed out. And when I show people at programming meetups, like, look at this app, you know, it felt very much like a native app in terms of the design and the features and the scrolling and performance. And especially when I started building user interface. And so Atlas was amazingly impressive, and Native Client is amazingly impressive. So it was a very impressive technology. So I mentioned how Atlas basically had a pretty poor code editor built in, and that's a story in its own. But it used to have syntax coloring and stuff like that. But pretty much real work was done in either Xcode or more likely TextMate. But when I say that, you know, you use Atlas like an interface builder. So how did that work? And that was with, they have this format called SIBs, for Cappuccino Interface Builder, essentially. And SIBs are provide the same purpose as ZIBs and NIBs as we know them. And as a matter of fact, Cappuccino comes with a tool called Nib to SIB that will take your NIBs and will input a NIB and output a SIB. And these SIBs can be loaded directly by Cappuccino and define your user interface. So what Atlas allowed you to edit these SIBs directly, and it was actually really powerful, and powerful in a way that Interface Builder still isn't and can't be, in that you could drag a view in there, and your view, it wasn't like you've had a custom view. It wasn't just like this, okay, I'm going to draw you this light blue box that represents your view. Is that it actually could instantiate your real view, because it's all eval runtime stuff. It could take advantage of the runtime system in a way that, of course, with Objective-C, you have to compile it and then instantiation. Instantiation isn't too bad, but I think Apple could eventually do this if they wanted to, but they haven't. It's a harder problem with Objective-C versus Objective-J. So you have so not only do you not deal with like HTML and CSS and kind of this low-level stuff when building these apps that you normally would have to do with web technology, is that you also have these higher-level tools, at least you did. So I was on the Atlas beta, so I got a bunch of versions of the Atlas as they were working on it. And what happened is that... Motorola Mobility. So Motorola divided into, there's Motorola Solutions, I think, or something. And the one that we're more familiar with, that's from the press and the trades, and the one that builds the cell phones, is Motorola Mobility. And they end up buying 280 North.
I'm sorry, is that Motorola Morbidity?
Pretty much. Motorola is not a happy place. But they, for supposedly $20 million, they bought up the 280 North. And I think to this day, 280 North never put a put out a press release about this or anything. It was unfortunately reported by Michael Arrington, but that seems to be the where the anchor of the information is. I couldn't find anything below that, and so it was of course long time. You know, Apple developers kind of like get this instinctive punch in the gut when they hear Motorola has bought a developer tool because of, can you think of what I'm thinking of, Andrew?
That would be Code Warrior.
That would be Code Warrior. Yes. Our beloved Mac development environment. Of course, it was also Beyond Mac stuff, but, and Motorola said, well,
they bought it for the embedded development.
That's pretty much it.
In as much as they had a good reason for buying it at all.
Yes. Yeah, because Motorola also had like semiconductor stuff in Texas. And I think that it got spun off as like Lightspeed or something with light in the name or something.
Something like that, yeah.
We're just really ignorant about names of everything in this episode. But
well, you know, somebody can look it up, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, I did go to the Motorola page for whatever reason. It might have been because we were talking about it like a couple months ago. Uh-huh. And they do actually still let you download some kind of Code Warrior IDE, but that's like their legacy thing. And they've got something new, which is presumably, I think it's like a Windows only download.
Mm.
And obviously it isn't the same technology anymore. They've gone with something else. So it's, you know, within, what was it, 15 years, I guess? I mean, I guess 15 years is a long time, but, you know, even they couldn't get Code Warrior to do what they really wanted it to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they eventually have pretty much dropped it for something else. So that's what I know.
Mm-hmm. So this was a blow to the Cappuccino community, because obviously Cappuccino was really top notch technology. And there was a lot of questions about, okay, so Motorola's, you know, so old time Apple developers are like, oh crap, Motorola's going to kill it. And, you know, so we're like, wait, isn't necessarily history repeating? Let's get a hold of ourselves. And then I'm just guessing it's part of the deal. So I don't know the details of the deal, but I imagine part of it was that there was a non-disclosure signed or something, because 280 North never announced it. It's never really talked about, you know, what was going on. I did believe a blog posting on this a while back that there was this technology called Janduya that I saw at a WebObjects conference a few years ago, and it was written by this guy called Benoit Martian, and he so Janduya is a very impressive technology. It too is a web technology, and essentially it was client-side WebObjects. It brought the component model of WebObjects to the client-side, and even had things like core data and remote access and the type of stuff that we kind of would like from like a core data on iOS that would like seamlessly interact with a REST service, that type of stuff. I know people are kind of doing that with incremental store nowadays, but this was, you know, obviously kind of ahead of his time. Really impressive stuff. And so I was following Benoit, and I noticed that he kind of popped over to Motorola. And so I took a lot of interest in that. And then all of a sudden, Motorola Mobility buys Cappuccino. And so I don't think it really took a genius to figure out that this was at the time when I think they were freshly screwed from Google with something Android. So Motorola Mobility was essentially, you know, off, you know, going to build its own, for lack of a better term, WebOS. So some sort of like system, some sort of operating system for their cell phones that would give them a great user interface that was built on web technologies. And
sounds good. When did that come out?
Yeah. So the thing is that there was this a couple things that there's two ways to answer your question, that it did come out and it will never come out. So it came out. Well, let's address the didn't come out. It can't come out. That on the way to them shipping the thing, this other small player jumped in called Google, who ended up buying Motorola Mobility. And Google has this thing called Android. And
little tiny niche player.
Yeah, I think I heard of it. I think something like that. I think some sort of like green.
We'll put
dragon.
The link in the show notes.
Oh, okay, there you go. Green robot. Android. Okay. And so I expected that they would never ship this thing at all. And it was kind of interesting because that meant that Google essentially ended up owning the intellectual property of this AppKit reimplementation for the web, which is really interesting. But anyway,
there have been some people who had talked about how, given the trajectory of 280 North, that it was probable that they had been planning on getting bought by Google in the first place.
Mm.
And that when that didn't happen, or Google passed on them, was when they started to think about other suitors and eventually went with Motorola. I don't know if any of that's true, but that was the speculation at the time.
Well, we do have some facts on the ground here, and this is where it comes back to they did and they didn't ship it. And the fact on the ground that Benoit ended up shipping this web development framework called Montage, and it's like at montagejs.com. And it seems like a perfectly nice, you know, bindings, web UI-ish kind of framework, but it's not catching the world on fire. I mean, there's already a lot of those players, right? And I have a lot of engineering respect for Benoit, but the field is pretty competitive right now. And the fact that it's coming from a big player like Motorola is actually a liability, not advantage, because people understand that Motorola is flaky and big companies are flaky, and are they going to, you know, put in the years of development there versus a, you know, something like Ember, say, which not a fair comparison because Ember tends to be less UI widgety, but but there's a lot of choices for web frameworks out there, and I don't know if I don't see Montage really gain much of a toehold. So this kind of brings us to the licensing of Cappuccino, which is GPL.
No,
I was hoping you reacted to this. Yes. So, as you know, I am very anti GPL. Maybe this is another episode in itself, but I think it was. You know,
you've
I don't
got,
want
what,
to do
four
this.
Episodes stacked up.
I don't want to do the Simpsons thing where they kind of like, you know, they talk about how they'll never do an episode, and now because they had to ship like 20 million episodes, they finally do an episode on something. But I don't want to do an episode on the GPL versus the world. But eventually we might have to. I don't know if we actually have anything to say that's unique.
We'll be in our 70s and we'll be like, shit, let's just do a GPL episode.
That could be our drunk episode.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So, as you know, I'm very anti-GPL, but you know, I think Ross made a very good point to me that, that number one, that Cappuccino is a client-side technology, that you are shipping Cappuccino code to your users. So this is, you never can really close it off. You have to ship this code to your users. So the fact that it's GPL, it actually doesn't affect you.
Yeah, true enough. Mm-hmm.
I thought about that a little bit later, and I think it could be considered problematic if you use aggressive minimizers, the type of things like the Google's Clojure compiler or Uglify JS that are really aggressive at removing symbols and all that. Adobe ships its Photoshop source code to its users, but you know, hey, it's an assembly. Adobe has to ship you all of its intellectual property so you can run Photoshop on your Mac. But again, it's really, really, really tedious to pull it all apart. So at what point do these aggressive minimizers and optimizers like basically are giving you assembly language for your web apps, and that no one in their right mind is going to tear apart this entire thing? Instead, you might want to get like a certain function that you disassemble or reverse or something. But so that's an interesting point of the GPL. And the other part is that, you know, again, you were talking about the directory, and maybe they're angling to be bought out by Google or something. I don't know what they're planning, but I think they chose the GPL because they want the technology to live on even after the monolith swallowed them up. And I think they've actually done a pretty good job, because the Cappuccino project is very alive today, even though Ross, Francisco, and Tom no longer work on it. It's they still chime in analysts and stuff like that, but they don't create code anymore. But
so it was GPL'd from the very beginning.
From the very beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it has a very active developer community still, and they're shipping new versions on a regular basis, and so it's very much alive, and it's really unrivaled in my opinion. If you want to build a desktop class application for the web, Cappuccino is it. It's SproutCore was kind of a competitor there for a while, but it kind of derailed and forked itself, and it might go along the same lines of eventually, but I don't see it as a real competitor to what Cappuccino has already delivered. So really, it's amazing technology, and I've written a few apps in it. I've employed a few apps in it, and it's really amazing. I'm really happy with it, and that kind of leads to a big problem that I have with Cappuccino, and that's largely I don't want to call it political. I don't want to call it like project management. Well, maybe I'll call it project management, and that Cappuccino. Like, I don't know if it kind of stems from, like, the ethos of 280 North, where the things they did tend to be these big splashes. You know, when they came out with 280 slides, it's like, oh my god, I haven't seen this on the web before. Like, you have Keynote on the web, that's unbelievable. And you see Atlas, like, oh my god, it's like this web app, but it's like a real app, but it's like, it's doing things with Interface Builder that Interface Builder can't do, and like, it's this futuristic Objective-J language. And it's just like all seemed like Aristo is, you know, beautiful, arguably more beautiful than macOS 10's theme. So it's like all this stuff is just really amazing. And so they kind of have this ethos where they don't ship something until it's absolutely amazing. And, you know, it's one thing when you're like 280 North and you're kind of like you're slugging for the – well, this is a bad idea for me to try to quote sports quotes, but it's like you're slugging for the outfield or something. I don't know.
Well, they're
– slugging for the bleachers, I think. That's it.
When they have venture funding, I think that's what you're getting at.
Yes.
And, they can act one way.
And so Cappuccino, as it stands right now, is like in version 0.9.6, some like release candidate 2 or something. So they're still working on 0.96. And – they're basically kind of holding off their 1.0 for a rewrite of Objective-J. And so Objective-J has it's how it's implemented is that Francisco quite rightly kind of wrote it to try to not to be a compiler as much as it could not be. It's basically it takes your, you know, .j file and it transforms it into JavaScript, and it wants to do the minimum possible work it can, because that might be happening inside the browser. Now, nowadays with modern deployment, you're going to be doing that ahead of time, but you can do it in the browser. So you want to do the minimum possible amount of work. And so the architecture of how Objective-J's compiler works is not really extensible, and they want to add new features like @each to kind of deal with JavaScript's broken enumerations. And also, Cappuccino performance on mobile browsers tends to suffer because of a fairly obscure kind of technical thing where how they implement, you know how in your methods, you can have a parameter A, you can have an IVAR A, and you can have a global A. And, you know, and obviously there's a, you know, obviously the compiler prefers the local A, before the IVAR A, before the global A, whatever. And so there's like, you kind of have this like this scope coalescing that you have, so you don't have to put, like in C++, same thing. Like you don't have to put like this arrow, some IVAR, and Objective C, you don't have to put self.foo, whatever. It's, of course, nowadays with, you know, properties, it's kind of encouraged you do that, but anyway, that's another tangent. So the idea is that you kind of want to be able to access IVARs without having to jump through self. So in order for them to do that, they use this weird language feature that JavaScript has called with. And with kind of have you ever used like in Pascal? They have what is it like using or is that something else? It's like with. Well, that's JavaScript. Anyway. Pascal has something similar where you can, instead of, if imagine you had to access, like, set 5 fields on a record. And it gets tedious saying record.1, record.8 equals this. Record.b equals that. Record.c equals that. So instead, you just say, okay, assume record. Now A equals that, B equals that, C equals that. It's a way of basically compressing your code down so you don't have to type as much. So JavaScript has the same feature called with, and that's what they use to allow you to access IVARs without having to put a self dot in front of it. Now, the problem is that because it's a weird feature and because it affects scoping rules in weird ways, optimizing JavaScript compilers, the type of stuff that actually turns it into JITs, I almost said it jits out by code, but I'm not going to say that. That's not going to make it the outtakes. When it jits to bytecode, it sees the weird width that's pretty uncommon and says, oh, I don't have an optimized path for this, so I'm just going to interpret this. So you get on the slow path. And so that means specifically like on the iPad, which tends to be, especially iPad 1, but you know, obviously iPads are getting faster in each generation, but it makes it, you take a performance hit because of this with Objective-J. So with Objective-J 2.0, Francisco has this new project he calls language.js, where he's doing some very interesting things. You know, it's going to be an interesting kind of technology because it involves a language feature called the naughty OR. And problem is that it doesn't look like Francisco has touched his project in something like 6 months, 9 months, something like that. It's not a top priority for him. He's off doing other things. And I'm really worried about, you know, Cappuccino as it stands right now just wins the game. It's like blows everything away for what it does. And yet it seems like they're holding back the 1.0, the all important marketing 1.0, for a list of things where they want to make it even more awesome. And it's one thing when you're a venture capital and you have, you know, a team of three guys who are really smart, cranking out this, you know, all the time. But when you have a volunteer group like they have now, a kind of distributed project, I think the time for like kind of, you know, putting off like your 1.0 for these big features is not good timing. And I think Cappuccino has lost a lot of steam because of it in terms of the project, in terms of the hype. So unfortunately, which is really too bad because like there's a lot of other and very interesting technology in Cappuccino. They basically have a core text technology that implements something that gives you basically really great text editing abilities in the browser. Unfortunately, that's not finished, but I really wish that they would just declare a 1.0, kind of get the press, and then all these, you know, we could finish up core text, and then we could finish up the language JS stuff, and then do Objective-J 2.0 and all this off, you know, without holding back the all important 1.0. But of course, that also is the kind of the bigger elephant in the room is that the mobile space has really heated up and has kind of sucked the oxygen out of the room in terms of like, would you actually write, you know, this? Do people care anymore about desktop class web applications or do they just want iPad apps and regular Cocoa apps? And of course, there's technology trade-offs there, but that, as I mentioned before, you know, native versus web technologies and versus desktop, you know, that's probably three episodes right there, but we probably condense into one. But that's kind of the entire spew. Is that, oh, one thing I want to mention that I forgot to mention, unfortunately, in my notes. Today, how you write when Motorola bought 280 North, Atlas went away. So I still have a copy of it, but it's, you know, you can't get a copy of it anymore. And so the way how you write Cappuccino apps today is that you pretty much draw your interface in Interface Builder side of Xcode, Modern Xcode, Xcode 4, 5. And there's this app called Xcode Cap that will kind of like how Xmode works. Is that it will look at your .zip files, it will use FS events that as you change your zip files, it automatically run nib to sib for you and turn into sib files. And then you can use your text editing and textmate, and of course, then you run in the browser. and it works amazingly well. The metrics on the old Nib2Sib were off, so you have to kind of have to put buttons in weird places, but they show up right. We actually ran in the browser, but they've done a lot of hard work in terms of gaining metrics to better match Cocoa and what you see in Interface Builder, and to better support all the different button styles, and they've done amazing work with TableView. Like CP TableView, I think, is pretty much unrivaled in terms of the performance and flexibility of it. And so you drag NS TableView into your NS window, and out comes, and when you run it, and at runtime, there's a CP window with your CP TableView in it, and it all looks fantastic because of Aristo. So bottom line is that Cappuccino is, like I said, fantastic technology, really wins the world here. And if you have anything that kind of requires kind of a desktop caliber software that runs in a web browser, that almost felt like it should be a Cocoa app, I'd highly recommend checking out Cappuccino.
All righty. Well, I think we're running a little over at this point. Yeah. So with that ringing endorsement, we will draw it to a close. So please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. You can find us individually on Twitter, me, Apontius, APONTIOUS, which is also my username on app.net, and Wolf, his last name, Wrench, that's the word rent, RENT plus Z plus SCH. We'll see you next time.